This is the audio that goes along with Brown versus Voss. We're going to talk about essentially enforcement of easements. So in Brown versus Voss, we start with an express easement, or other ways to put this is an easement by writing. So in 1952, there's an easement by what looks to be the predecessors entitled to property A and property B. Where essentially property B gets a easement to ingress to and egress from A to B. So A is the servient tenement, as it shows on slide one. B is the dominant tenement. This is an affirmative easement. Affirmatively get to do something across somebody else's property. It looks like it's appurtenant. It doesn't look like it. It is appurtenant because it's about whoever owns parcel B being able to go across parcel A. And if you kind of go to the next slide, you get a sense. This is the actual picture on the top of what my understanding is a very beautiful part of Washington State, where although we've got this kind of major highway on the right, there's an ability to kind of go in some of these side roads here and then work your way up to this other property. I don't know the specific address here. My gut is the reason that they want this roadway that's going across A that doesn't use the highway as because maybe there's a lot of trees or something that make it very difficult to get to B and particularly potentially to get to C. And so what happens in this case is Brown ends up buying parcel B. There's a home on it, but actually what he'd like to do is replace that home with another home that would straddle B and C. And so he actually starts doing it. He starts kind of making some clearings to put that building in place, starts moving fill material up there in late 1977. The defendant kind of starts seeing, who's the owner of parcel A, starts seeing this happening and noticing that Brown is going across that easement. when he goes across the easement, he doesn't just stop at lot B. He actually goes up to lot C, and so Voss takes a look at this easement language here, the express language, and says, well, wait a minute, it's just a parcel B. You're actually going out to parcel B now. You're actually going outside of the scope of the easement. And so by 79, we've got a decent amount of development that's done, and so Voss decides to basically block the easement. And the reason he blocks the easement, he says, look, you're using the easement to get to C that's outside the scope of the easement. The response from Brown is, but wait a minute, I've got an easement to go to B. It's really no different. And so the suit initiates with Brown telling Voss to remove that chain link fence and all those obstructions, etc. And Voss counterclaims to essentially say, look, I don't need to remove them, but you can't use the easement to get to C. And so I want a court order that reinforces this fact that if you go across that easement and go up to C, you're outside the scope of the easement, and that's an injunction. And so the court below says, okay, look, both of you guys get a dollar, you know, yippity-yee. Because there's this kind of minor bit of trespass that's going on that really does no difference in actual harm to Voss, and Voss is appealing his counterclaims because he says, listen, you know, property rights are property rights. The easement's fairly express. I'm just going, you can just go from A to B. You can't go from A to C. That's outside the scope, and I want an injunction. So slide two shows, again, the picture of the property area that we're talking about. I don't have an actual picture of the actual property that we're talking about. The court essentially articulates a statement of law that is actually fairly clear and well settled. And if you go to slide three, it's restated here. If an easement is appurtenant to a particular parcel of land, and here we have an appurtenant easement. What does appurtenant mean? It's tied to ownership of the land. Here it's an easement that's tied to ownership of lot B. You can't extend the easement to other parcels. That's considered to be a misuse of the easement, which basically means that here, extending that use from B to C would be an improper extension of the easement. It would go outside the scope of it, and thus now you're violating the easement. And the response from Brown is, look, there's no factual difference between whether I go up to C or I go up to B. I'm still driving across A's property. The response, at least on the liability side from the court, is look, the common law is the common law. What the easement says is what the easement says. It's misuse of the easement to go outside of it. We, as a court, aren't going to sit here and talk about whether we think it's a greater use or less use between the two. Because you could think of an example here where A and B decide to get together, agree to this easement, A essentially values the easement, says, look, if you pay me $1,000, you can have this permanent easement to go across my property to lot B. And essentially with that $1,000, A's trying to figure out, okay, what's the kind of cost to me? What kind of burden will it place on my property? I can take a look at lot B, what's on lot B, get some sense as to some scope as to what we think the use will be, and I can value that burden with a certain amount. Once you start tagging on other pieces of property above that, the value might be different. Right, more property might mean more usage, possibly. The bigger the property is, the more somebody could potentially use it. And so A might have valued that type of easement differently. And so I think this statement of law, if an easement's appurtenant, if we're tying it to a piece of property, it stays tied to that property. Using it outside that property results in some misuse. It's part of our thinking that if we think of our broader kind of benefit versus burden analysis, when the parties agreed that you could use A to get to B, there was some valuation there to say that at least these things were equal, the benefit and the burden. And once you start tagging on these other pieces of property, that throws things out of balance. But when you get to the remedy side, the court says, okay, well, here we actually will take some thought as to the idea of how much use there is here. And the fact that right now the use that's taking place is no different, right, than the use that was happening before. The equities here suggest to us, right, that I think the trial court was correct. We're not going to grant an injunction in this case because the usage is no different here. Brown has expended some cash on his own to try to make the development that's there. We're not going to allow Voss to use an injunction to essentially get some leverage over Brown to force him to pay more money than maybe he should. And we just don't really think Voss is that irreparably harmed, and so we don't grant an injunction. This prompts the dissent to say, well, what's a property rule if we're not going to actually issue an injunction? Now, the ultimate probably effect of the injunction would be that Brown probably couldn't go across A at all, because we don't know that once Brown goes across A, that he's just going to stay on B, or if he's actually going to go up to C. And particularly if we build a house that straddles B and C, we can almost presumptively think that he's always going to use that easement to go to part of C. He's not going to stay in the B part of the house. And so administration of that injunction would be difficult. And probably and then what the court would say is, well, look, if this is common ownership, then I'm sorry, you can't use the easement because we just don't know when you're going to C. And I think this is what prompts the majority to say, you know what, we're not going to issue an injunction in this case. You need to come back to us if it turns out the burden shift. If it turns out actually maybe that he builds this gigantic house or the house is completely on C or something like that, then right, maybe then he could go back to the court and seek an injunction. I think the fact that we don't see an injunction being issued shows that courts really think a lot about that benefit versus burden. And here, at least under the facts that are presented, they don't think the benefit versus burden analysis has changed really at all from that original writing. Let's assume, this is that last bullet point there on slide three, that the court does issue an injunction. What are Brown's other options? I think the other options to Brown are to try to find other ways to say that an easement was created from A to get to C that doesn't involve a writing. And we've talked about those both virtually and in our question and answer sessions. And so we could go through them, right? So one question would be is, could we imply an easement or could we create an easement by necessity? Now, one of the big things about both of those would require common ownership initially. So if we went back up to slide one, we'd have to ask ourselves, okay, look, were A, B, and C commonly owned at some time? And when you broke them apart, did they either, with an easement by necessity, create a necessity, potentially a strict necessity? Now, the problem there is that SR 101 road might suggest that there isn't a strict necessity. Or if we were doing an easement by implication by prior use, we'd be looking for a quasi-easement. That is, someone went across lot A to get to lot C, right? And that was an apparent, continuous, and permanent usage that was taking place. This would all be information that I would need to research if I was Brown. But there's a possibility. There's a real possibility that maybe we've got an easement by implication or an easement by necessity. Probably more so an easement by implication, but again, I'd have to find that prior use. If we don't have that common ownership, then we get pushed into our other two alternatives, easement by prescription or an easement by estoppel. And these basically vary depending on whether we are getting consent or not getting consent of going across A. At least initially, it looks like, because the person only owned B and not C, that we probably aren't getting consent to go across A to get to C. Because there's really almost no knowledge, right, that we're actually going to C at that time, that point in time. That would be prior to Brown's activities. And in that case, we'd be looking for easement by prescription, and we need to have enough time. And it looks like here we might not necessarily have enough time. Once Brown buys C and starts going across it, I think we start having the beginnings of an easement by estoppel. What do we need? We need a license to begin with, right? And at least it looks like from the facts, they're not fully built up, that initially Voss understands that that Brown's clearing those lots, starts moving fill materials across it, and for at least 2 years invests about $11,000. So we could say at least if it turned out that Voss knew about it, didn't do about it anything initially, we've got some potential at least implicit license. There is some improvement that's done on reliance of the permanence of that license, and we have to infer consent. I think this still would be difficult because the time period's not that long, although time's not necessarily the end-all be-all with easement by estoppel. But the other fact is that every time he goes across that easement, that road, we're not looking to see whether there was consent to get to B, there's whether there was consent to get to C. And this is going to be a lot to push on Voss to say that we think he's consenting to that development that's happening upon C. And in some ways, the fact that he ends up putting all this stuff in place really stops that possibility for an easement by estoppel. And then we would switch to an easement by prescription if it turns out, right, that Brown keeps going across and trying to get to the lot that's there. But I think it's always good to think about these alternatives, other ways in which we could have an easement that's created. In the end, that's not what Brown needed. He just doesn't have the injunction against him, so he can use it currently, right? But the question becomes is, if his usage gets much different, materially different, then maybe he could be sued again by Voss.